Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hear this, right now.
Welcome.
Prime Time with Isaac and Suk.
What is going on up here?
I never know, man.
Unbiased.
Shut your mouth.
Uncompromised sports talk without the sugarcoating.
I hope you're happy. You wasted everyone's life for 30 seconds.
Isaac Ropp and Jason Sukanik.
Now shut up and let me do my job.
The best in sports coverage.
This is going to be great.
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back in. Hour number two, Prime Time, a Buck and Suk edition. Schulte doing the heavy lifting on the other side of the glass. We will get back to our conference championship charcuterie coming up a little bit later, but coming up this hour, we've got Stock Watch in the next segment, followed by In the News. I have some bad beach driving for you, and when a dry spell is a good thing here in Oregon. But right now, I want to get to a little college coaching carousel and some pro football coaching carousel, but some interesting moves in and out of the Big Ten recently. A lot was made of the changes that Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator at Ohio State, made midseason after the loss to Oregon, what they changed in scheme, and basically made a living hell for their opponents the rest of the season with their two safeties out there. Well, he's on the move now. He is not going back to Ohio State. He is going to rival Penn State. Now, Penn State lost their defensive coordinator, Tom Allen, to Clemson a week ago, and you're wondering, are they going to be able to hold things together? Well, they go out and get Jim Knowles, and according to Brett McMurphy, he tweeted earlier today, Ohio State DC Jim Knowles was asked by the school not to attend the Buckeyes' national title celebration while he deliberated his options. Knowles' representation tried to reach a deal with Ohio State a week before the title game and immediately after, but eventual offer was, quote, well below the competition, and Knowles signs a three-year, $9.3 million deal with Penn State on Sunday.
Look, welcome to the world of football, like college football. This is why I laugh anytime someone gets pissy about the NIL stuff. Here's a guy who, by the way, is a really good DC, but let's not act like this is like, he was the defensive coordinator for Oklahoma State before this.
This isn't Spags.
No. Like he
did a really nice job this year.
Yeah, this is his coaching resume over the last 25 years. He was the defensive line coach at Western Michigan. He was the defensive coordinator at Western Michigan for 1 year, and then he was at Cornell. He was a defensive coordinator and linebacker coach at Duke, and then was the defensive coordinator at Oklahoma State. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with those Oklahoma State defenses. They weren't exactly like the end all, the be all defenses.
They weren't known for their defense in Stillwater, if I'm not mistaken.
And then he was the coordinator at Ohio State. And yes, he did a really nice job this year after their defense got torched by Oregon. But I don't know, the guy wanted $3 million,
which is a lot for a college coordinator.
Well, it's the highest paid coordinator in the game.
Yeah.
So coming off that, he said, I want to be the highest coordinator in the game. And my guess is Ohio State went, no. Why exactly are we making you the highest paid defensive coordinator? Well, we just won a national title. And they're like, well, yeah, but you know, was that all because of you?
So then I wonder by the same token, though, because we kind of had this conversation a little bit about the Cowboys and paying head coaches a while back. And now today, Ohio State, it was reported, was operating with a $37 million deficit in their athletic department this year or something. So maybe they are trying to tighten up the finances or something.
You can't just spend never-ending cash.
Ohio State is not the Cowboys.
No, they don't have an unlimited budget. And look, is it petty? Maybe, but if my defensive coordinator is
to me, the petty part was saying don't come to the parade.
I also think it's petty though of him to think that it's some sort of a negative. If we're going to a championship parade and you're around my team and I know that you're about to go to our arch rival
that you might be leaving, I hadn't really considered the competition angle the other side of that. I just assumed, hey, we just won this thing. We're celebrating together. We may part our separate ways.
But at the same time, in a world where everyone is recruiting everybody, Is it fair to think that if that's a popular defensive coordinator,
he's going to try to take some guys with him?
I don't necessarily want him around my team and poaching players.
And I have heard that in today's college football, if you think a guy is going to move on, you need to cut bait immediately because the more time he spends around your players, the more chance he's going to poach him.
I know Oregon did it with some of their coaches they thought were moving on. They weren't having him recruit.
Yeah,
they were like, dude, we
can't have you talking to players that you might be trying to sway to go somewhere else.
Exactly. One, you don't want. You don't want them actually recruiting for another school, or you don't want them trying to build a really strong relationship. And then even if they are not recruiting for the other school, the moment they decide to leave, they're like, hey, by the way, I know we have a really good bond and I'm heading over here. So is it petty? Maybe. But I also think it's
reasonable.
I think it's reasonable.
Sure.
You know, and so this idea that Jim Knowles is the reason why Ohio State won a national title or Penn State's going to get over the hump, you can find a really good defensive coordinator for $3 million. And so I don't know what they think of Jim Knowles at Ohio State. Obviously, they didn't think enough about him to give him $3 million because they said it's substantially lower. And let me just say.
So where's Penn State getting that money?
Or maybe they just are like they're desperate because they're like, we can't get over the hump, and you know, let's take a swing. Look, we're all operating under the assumption that people have a similar pool of money, and you know, money gets allocated different ways. Ohio State's probably gonna have to pay $4.5 million to keep Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah,
Penn State doesn't have a player that they're gonna have to pay $4.5 million to keep.
Nope.
You know, or maybe
Drew Aller's not coming back for $4 million.
No. I don't think Drew Aller is going to cost $4 million. If someone wants to give Drew Aller $4 million,
it's Miami who paid Carson Beck $4
million. Yeah, be my guest. Have at it. So, now this is just kind of the nature of the beast, but this is why I never get pissy and moany about NIL, because this is what coaches do and this is what coaches have always done. Last year when Saban retired, Dan Lanning, Steve Sarkisian, and Mike Norvell all used that job to get extra money for them, their school, and their staff.
Yep.
Every single one of them. And by the way, I think they're all represented by the same agent.
Yeah, I think that's Sexton. Right. Yeah.
So look, every one of those guys held their school hostage to get big fat raises for them and for others. Welcome to the world of big time athletics. So this to me is a bit of a, I think it's petty, sure, but it's a bit of an eye roll. And by the way, Ohio State's going to be fine.
Yeah.
I promise you that the next defensive coordinator they hire, Jim Knowles was not Jim Knowles before he got to Penn State, or before he got to Ohio State.
It's amazing how good how well good players can make a coach better.
Yeah, dude, if I've got seven guys that are going to probably go in the first three rounds of the defensive on my defensive unit, I probably should be pretty good. I would think so. And made adjustments, but you also got torched by Oregon in that first game, which I thought was a really piss poor game plan.
Yeah.
So
fair enough.
Be careful when you go to a school.
Yeah, you just kept getting burned over and over again by man coverage.
Yeah.
And,
just be careful with Jim Knowles. Jim Knowles is not the end all to be all at Ohio State, which is why you saw them say $3 million.
We did have another significant hire, at least one with local ties here in the NFL. We'll get to that a little bit later. But coming up next, it is our Stockwatch time for Schultzy to ask us what we are buying and selling from the sports weekend that was. It's coming up next on Primetime 1080 The Fan. We do it every Monday at this time. Usually I'm in Schultzy's chair doing his job. But Schultzy, what do we have for us on this glorious Monday Stockwatch?
We got a lot of NFL. All NFL.
So beautiful.
Let's just get it started here, baby.
Coachman, defense number 93. Washington has been advised that at some point the referee can award a score if this type of behavior happens again. For now, it's a replay of second down.
So that was near the end of the Commanders-Eagles game. In the second half, of course, Luvu tried to jump over the line twice, mistimed that, and got called for encroachment before Jonathan Allen then jumped early, prompting that warning from the officials. I've never heard that in my life before. I know, Suki, you've played in the NFL. I don't think you knew that was possible, guys. We've been talking about the referees and whether or not they affect games too much, conversations surrounding their involvement, protecting quarterbacks too much, protecting Pat Mahomes. Apparently they can just add a score to a team's total, guys. Buy or sell, refs should be allowed to award a score when they see fit.
Go ahead, Suk. This was wild, though. I was not familiar with the, quote, this is what it's called, the palpably unfair act rule.
Thank you.
Yes. I did know this. I didn't remember the exact details of it, but it does get mentioned once in a while. The idea is that, like, if you just, when it's half the distance of the goal, if there's something you don't like, you know, do you just, you can literally just grab a receiver every time and throw him down.
Yeah.
Like, tackle him or jump off sides every single
time. I remember Chip Kelly doing this when in his 1 year with the head coach of San Francisco. They were ending a half.
Yeah.
And they had, like, six or seven defensive penalties in a row because they're like, well, we're just going to make sure it doesn't happen.
Yes. So I did know that there are...
I did not know a ref could award a touchdown.
I knew it was one of those things where that after a certain point, the refs kind of have a lot of leeway. And when they said that, I was like, I can't say that I instantly knew that you could award a score. But in that situation, once they gave the warning, I was like, oh, yeah. I'm like, you can't keep doing this. And by the way, I was really hoping that it would happen.
I want to see it.
Come on. Because the last time they jumped, it was not intentional. He, you know, they just got him on the hard count.
Yeah.
It wasn't old Frankie going, you know, over the top there, go Cougs. So, yes, I was aware of that. And they do have it in there for that reason. Like, imagine if you're punting and, you know, or whatever, and you just keep dragging people down. Like, you can't intentionally commit a penalty over and over and over again to bog down a game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I've never seen it happen. I don't know if it's ever happened, but it is in place. And I think there's a reason why. And I think it's a valid thing. Because once that happens, then you're like, oh, crap, don't do it again.
They said this rule has been around since 1942, or at least I heard that today. I don't know that I haven't heard of it ever actually being used. The fact that they didn't have to use it here, and at least in my lifetime, I've never seen it used, makes me think it's okay that it exists because it hasn't come into play.
They warned him. I mean, I gave him two warnings.
Yeah.
I just would have been cool to see it happen again. You know, and because, I mean, it's a valid point. If that rule's in place, why wouldn't you just keep doing that?
Yeah.
You know, because you can't get any closer to the goal line.
Yep.
You know?
I mean, at some point, you can't inch the ball forward any further. So.
No. So might as well just take a chance and jump the snap and hope that God one day you make a play.
This goes on the quarterback. The wins go to the quarterback. The losses go to the quarterback. And I think Josh Allen has to ask himself, was I born in the wrong era? Because Mahomes is not going anywhere, Boone.
Nope.
He's not going anywhere whatsoever. This is number five, and he's going for three in a row. Going for his fourth overall. So at some point, they got to figure out a way to get over the hump. And I don't feel bad for anyone because everything in this game is earned, not given. They got to figure out a way to go earn a Super Bowl because the Chiefs continue to do it.
That is Booger McFarland on ESPN discussing the career of Josh Allen. Of course, nobody except Joe Burrow has been able to beat Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. It's never happened in these 7 years. Mahomes has been marching towards Super Bowls. 0-4 now for Josh Allen in his playoff career against Mahomes and the Chiefs, trying to reach their first Super Bowl in his career, guys. Buy or sell, the Bills lost to Kansas City, like Booger said, is Josh Allen's fault.
No, again, the hot takes that are coming out of this thing, they're silly. They're just absolutely silly. Josh Allen's fault. No, ultimately, what's the old adage? Like, when we win, it's we. When we lose, it's I. When you're the quarterback, mm-hmm. right? And so obviously you get a lot of credit when it goes your way and you get a lot of blame. But again, this idea that to get over the hump, it takes some sort of magical effort for Josh Allen. A couple years ago, Josh Allen led them down to the winning score, and then his defense didn't hold up for 17 seconds or whatever.
And by the way, he almost single-handedly beat them himself this year, running the ball 40 yards at the end of the game.
So that's Josh Allen's fault a couple years ago. Again, the fourth and one, that's Josh Allen's fault that they didn't get any of those. It wasn't the blocking. Kincaid dropping the ball, the defense not being able to get off the field on third and 10. Josh Allen did not. I didn't think Josh Allen played a great game in the first half. I thought he was lights out in the second. They ran the ball real well. But to say that is on Josh Allen, again, you're just looking for clicks and you're looking for hot takes. But that's just that's an absolutely ridiculous argument that somehow the Bills' failures are Josh Allen's failures. They're the Bills' failures, and Allen is part of that. But I promise you, the thing that is the least problematic about the Buffalo Bills...
It's Josh Allen's
play. Josh Allen. If you want a problem, it's the slowness and the plottiness of their secondary. And when they lost their starting corner and they pointed it, the backup that came was that Elam or whatever, that guy got
Kyrie
picked
Elam
on left and right. And they made that second half, the back half of that defense, look slow all game long. And that's not Josh Allen either. So, nice try with the hot take.
Yeah, I will say that... Josh Allen looked a little rough in the first half. He wasn't himself. He certainly didn't play like the MVP candidate he was all day, but he didn't play poorly enough to say that this is on him. If anything, I think there are times where he kept him in this game. I thought the ball to Mac Hollins was perfect and incredible.
It was amazing.
Josh
Allen went 22 of 34 with two touchdowns and no picks.
There's a producer.
Quarterback rating of 104.
For ESPN, who does great stats research. And he points out that in Josh Allen's four playoff runs, 10 games total, he averages 250 pass yards a game, 50 rush yards a game. He has 22 touchdown passes and one pick with six touchdown runs and zero fumbles. So that is 28 total touchdowns, one turnover. The worst thing you can say about him is that he's not the god that is Patrick Mahomes.
Yes, his biggest fault is that he is not Patrick Mahomes.
And that is not something you can blame him for.
No, but I thought, especially early on, I thought that their game plan was wonky. And I thought they got outcoached. I did. I think they got outcoached by Kansas City most of that game.
And you know what? A lot of people get outcoached by Reed and Spagnuolo. It happens.
And yet it still came down to just fractions of an inch.
Yep. And they are right there knocking on the door. And you know, Chris Jones said it on an interview with Scott Van Pelt after the game. He said, if you want to break up this dynasty, you might have to find someone who's going to hire Spags as a head coach because we're not going anywhere with this defense. And they deserve a lot of credit, too.
Now, I get my proverbial ass kicked over needing people in my comfort zone. Without this thing being about me in any way, if you don't think I can't operate out of my comfort zone, you're so wrong. It's unbelievable. This is as big a risk as you could take. As big a risk as you could take. No head coaching experience.
That is Dallas Cowboys' very, very old owner, Jerry Jones, at Brian Schottenheimer's opening presser as the new head coach of the Cowboys today, discussing taking a risk and working outside of his comfort zone. Very surprising to many that they did not let McCarthy interview with the Bears, then just let him go, and now have just promoted from within their own organization and promoting a guy that wasn't really on anybody's list for a head coach. So, guys, fair or foul, or excuse me, sorry, I'm used to baseball. Buy or sell, the Dallas Cowboys will have more success under Brian Schottenheimer than they did Mike McCarthy. What was that, three playoff appearances in five seasons? Two division wins?
I don't know what they're doing.
If this was your plan all along to dump McCarthy for a Schottenheimer, then I really don't know.
I'm baffled. And by the way, when you're complimenting your coach, you should probably not throw your coach under the bus by saying that it's this giant risk.
Yeah, it shouldn't be. You're the Dallas freaking Cowboys.
I'll just say this. Most of the time when you make a hire and no one else wants your coach, it's usually a pretty good indicator of what that coach
is. Yeah, who else was he interviewing with for head jobs?
No.
Nobody.
He didn't even call the plays in Dallas. Like, if you're doing this, did you just not want to wait on Kellen Moore? Again, everything you hear out of Dallas is that Jerry Jones, quote, loves. Again, he talked about it. The fact that he's addressing his comfort zone means there's truth to it because he has to address it.
Yeah.
Jerry Jones wants people that he finds that are his guys that he feels like he can kind of, for lack of a better term, keep under his thumb. And I don't know if there's a more neutered coach in the NFL that we've seen in years than this.
Oh, and by the way, did you see who Schottenheimer then hired as his DC?
Who'd he hire?
Matt Eberflus.
If you're the Cowboys, I'm sorry. If you're a Cowboy fan, good luck to you. Look, Pete Carroll was like USC's like ninth choice, and that worked out pretty well. So maybe this is a...
Yeah, Dana Altman was like Oregon's like sixth or seventh or eighth choice after...
Maybe this is a stroke of genius. I cannot give you... I always like to say when I'm trying to explain something, I may not agree with it, but I can... As long as I can see the path of what you're trying to do, then I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Again, I'm not in the meetings, not part of that organization. I cannot sit here and give you any sort of...
Yeah, what's the direction here?
I don't know. I have yet to hear a narrative where this makes sense. So if you're Dallas, God bless you. Good luck.
And we don't have the audio of this, but I believe I can quote this because Jerry said this himself earlier today. He said everything in Dallas is fine. It's all smiles and glory holes.
That is a real thing that he said. Like, we wanted to double check. Like, I was like, that can't be real. That's like AI.
No, he said it.
He said it. God bless the Cowboys. Also, fun fact that Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes that are getting ready to play in the Super Bowl, they were both born, grew up, went to college in the NFL, and are in the Super Bowl later than the Cowboys were last.
More recently.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Welcome to the Cowboys.
And Mahomes, I mean,
how about them Cowboys?
Mahomes is almost 30.
Yeah, he's 29. Yeah.
Well, that'll do it for
Dallas is a mess.
They are a certifiable mess. That'll do it for our Stock Watch, brought to you every week by Goldberg and Jones Divorce for Men. You can always reach them at 1-800-DIVORCE. That's 1-800-DIVORCE. In the news is coming up next, some bad beach driving, and when a dry spell is a good thing. Plus, some snow white might be coming. That's next. Primetime, 1080 The Fan, here's Schultzy. Welcome back to Primetime. We'll have to hop back into our conference championship charcuterie coming up next with the NFC championship game. We'll get to that next hour. In the club tonight, Gen Z sounds pathetic once again. Suk missed this when he was gone, but...
Damn Gen Zers.
Apparently they don't know how to change a light bulb, and we have something that may rival that for them.
It is shocking when you find out that kids don't know how to do certain things.
Like, really?
Yeah, you're like... And then you're like, well, maybe you never had to before.
Or maybe... And then you're like, well, maybe no one taught them. Whose fault is that? Yeah. But it's hard to know. Right now, what I do know is that it is Monday, January 27th. It is time for In the News... Monday, January 27th, my stepmom's birthday. So oh, happy birthday, Julie.
Oh, do you call her mom or do you call her Jules?
I call her Julie. The other thing is that because
you're not my mom, Julie.
Well, because we have little kids, they all call her Juju.
Oh, yeah. All right.
And my wife's family, her dad is of Jewish descent. When he heard that for the first time, he was floored. He was like, fantastic. "You call her Juju?"
When did Juju come into your life? Were you
younger? I was in college.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I wondered if you had ever given, you're not my mom and you never will be.
No.
I love when there's like hot step-parent drama.
Yeah, I heard from a buddy of mine today, and not step-parent drama, but he said that his four-year-old who didn't want to go potty told him that she wanted a new family.
Yeah. Valid point.
Let's see, what do we have for you today? It is Farmhouse Breakfast Week.
Oh.
I like a farmhouse breakfast.
Is that just the, we got a lot of meat?
I assume it's doing a lot of meat, probably big portions and, I don't know, cast iron cooking? I'm not sure what makes a farmhouse breakfast a farmhouse breakfast.
Yeah,
but
if you told me like a farmhouse skillet, I'm just assuming we got some ham in there.
Could even be a little country gravy, I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Well, who doesn't enjoy a good breakfast?
It is Bubble Wrap Appreciation Day.
All right, well, go Bubble Wrap. Yeah, and I popped the little bubbles and now they got the big bubbles.
I know, and like the packing bubbles. Like,
yeah.
Because like, it went from like the little tiny guys to like,
yeah,
oh, there's like the ones that are the size of like a silver dollar, and now you got like full-on bubble pillow things.
Yeah, it's a whole different ball game now. Not as fun to pop.
No, there's nothing more annoying than trying to get those like cut down or popped and put them into the trash, because then
they just take up all that space.
Yeah, it's just a bunch.
That's my job at home. It's one of the few things that I do around the house. Then additionally, it is National Chocolate Cake Day. Chocolate cake do anything for you?
Not really.
Yeah,
you know,
me neither.
You know my feeling on chocolate. Yeah. I find and it's a controversial take. I just find chocolate to be mid.
I like chocolate. I find cake to be mid.
There's just other things I enjoy better than chocolate. I feel like everyone goes the end all to be all chocolate. Nah, man, give me some caramel. Give me some nice yellow cake. Give me a nice cream cheese frosting. Now we're...
Cream cheese frosting is what will flip me from no cake to yes cake. Give me a cream cheese frosting in there and I become a cake
person. Why am I putting chocolate frosting when I can have cream cheese frosting?
That is always the answer. And that's why cakes like red velvet and carrot are usually better than chocolate and others.
I would tend to agree.
Let's see. We have a dry spell here in Portland. Usually a dry spell, not a good thing. But in this case, I think people are enjoying it. If we get to Thursday with zero precipitation, that will mark 18 straight days here in Portland of no precipitation.
Well, that's,
that would be a new record.
Is that good or is that bad?
I think it's neither.
It's just unusual.
It's not like we're, I don't think it's one of those climate change things where we're like, oh, this is a big problem. And by the way, right after that, we got a ton of weather coming in. So that's the second part of this story, is that we may see snow in the Cascades this weekend. Coming as early as Friday, we should be getting as much as an inch of rain in lower elevations. Mm-hmm. If the weather pattern changes, that means we could see snow around our fair city of Portland.
Fresh pow-pow for you bros up there in the Cascades to go shred.
Shred that cherry gnar, Bo.
There you go.
It's been up there for a while. I mean, they had the earliest opening, I think, of a Timberline, like, the entire, like, history.
I'm just happy. I'll take 60 and sunny. I'll take 40 and sunny. You know, as long as it's... The only part that gets me is I don't mind the cold and I don't mind the rain. I don't like cold rain. If you give me...
Yes.
If you give me 60 degrees and it's raining outside, that's not so bad. There's a little sun. It's not all dreary. And if it's really cold but sunny, those are great mornings.
When you get, like, the 40-degree rain days, those are the worst.
Just
easily the worst.
Just bleak. And you're like, what are we doing?
Should you retire in the state of Oregon? What do you think? These are from our friends at Wallet Hub. You know, they provide us with many great research studies. They have researched the top 50 states and ranked in order the best and worst to retire in. Oregon is a positive or negative for
I'm saying you don't want to retire in Oregon.
Oregon, no good. The 39th worst state for retirement.
We're going to job you over. We love our taxes. You don't want to be here. The retirement's always going to be like Texas and Florida or maybe some place like Wyoming.
So Wallet Hub's rankings are based on affordability, quality of life, and health care. We only ranked ahead of Indiana, Hawaii, Arkansas, West Virginia, Rhode Island, New Jersey, New Mexico, Washington, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Kentucky.
So a lot of poor states and then like an expensive state like Hawaii.
Well, and it says that Oregon actually surprisingly not good in the affordability category. We rank 42nd out of 50 in affordability.
Who thinks it's affordable to live in Oregon?
Well, I don't know.
Really?
I would have thought that it would not have been bottom 10.
Let me just state for the record, if you want to live near the ocean, it's not affordable.
That's true. Yeah, anything coastal. That's a good point.
I always say, like, when people get all bent out of shape about living in the coast and how expensive it is, and believe me, I don't want things to be expensive either, but there is a whole other section of the United States that you can move to. Very affordable. It's just that no one wants to live there.
Yeah, you hear about, and now I don't even know which gen this is. I don't think it's Gen Z. Maybe it is Gen Z. Maybe it's the millennials. That they're, like, moving to these, like, middle-of-nowhere communities in, like, North Dakota and stuff like that. Because they're like, oh, we can actually get something
anytime
here.
Anytime I hear a young person say that I'll never buy a house, and they lament it, and I always say...
buy a house, it just won't be here.
That's right. And I always am sympathetic. I said, that sucks, because you should be able to afford, with a real job, where you grew up. Unfortunately, that's not reality. And if you would like to purchase a house, there's a wonderful state called Nebraska. Take a look at it. I think Iowa right now, probably some screaming deals on property.
Yeah.
Have you thought about New Mexico? But no one wants to live there. You want to live an hour away from the ocean, an hour away from the mountain. And guess what? Everyone else does too. And that usually means it's pretty expensive.
Chip Lupo is the analyst on this Wallet Hub case. He says that retirement is supposed to be relaxing. It can also be incredibly stressful, given that it typically puts people on a fixed income, which may not be enough for them to live comfortably on. As a result, the best states for retirees are those that have the lowest taxes, the lowest cost of living, and allows their budgets to reach as far as possible. Also, excellent medical care.
I love looking around. I always read those articles about best places to retire.
So top states for retirement, you want to guess at those?
I'm going to say without taxes, so I'm going to say like Florida.
Florida's number one.
There you go.
Yeah. Those top five, Florida, Minnesota, Colorado, Wyoming, and South Dakota.
Yeah, again, so
cost of living
and places with no state income tax.
Yep.
But yeah, like there's a lot of that. Like I read those articles. A lot of people are retiring in Mexico. A lot of people are retiring in places like Belize.
Oh, yeah.
And you can stretch your Social Security dollar or whatever, your small retirement, on a long, long way in other places. You might have to move a little bit.
I think HGTV had like a kind of on top of their like Flip or Flop or House Hunter shows. They had like, this was 15 years ago, a show of people moving to Belize or moving to Central American countries, buying a really grand, almost mansion-like house for $200,000 and just living out their years.
Yeah, we got a friend of ours that he had a couple small businesses. Nothing, you know, he didn't make retirement money, but he made a few bucks. Still had to work, but he sold, liquidated all his stuff, and got a little tiny nest egg together, and went and moved to Belize. Bali.
Yeah, I've heard you mention this that now, and that's just where he's still working, but he's just doing it there now,
yeah,
right?
He works, yeah. And he was able to take his money and start another little small business out there in Bali, and his place and the cost of living out there is just absolute rock bottom, dirt cheap, and he does what his business that it was here. He was like in upholstery. He does over there, and you know, it just, you don't have to make a lot of money to live over there. And he bought a place in cash, and loves it. And you know, it's just, and there's a lot of people that are doing that. It's just the idea of like leaving the country or becoming an expat is scary for a lot of people. But there's more than one way to skin a cat.
I find that incredibly intriguing. The difficult part of it is, I think, often the generation lines. It's like at some point, parents need to say, we don't care that our kids are over here and we're gonna go. And obviously that doesn't apply to everyone, but like that expat thing is super appealing to my wife and I. But it's just like, well, when is that gonna happen? Well, 30 years?
Yeah, someone's saying Wyoming, the only place to retire in Wyoming is Jackson, and that's not affordable. First off, Jackson Hole is not affordable.
No.
It's a millionaire. And by the way, that is not the only place. I had a good buddy of mine from Grable, Wyoming, to Laramie. the idea that, you can only retire in places like Jackson Hole. I'm saying Indiana has tasty homes for 80 grand. Exactly.
Yep.
You know, you just might not want to live in Indiana. But also, let's not be ignorant and think that because it's not the West Coast, that it's nothing but rubes and a-holes that live in these
you
places.
You could build a very nice life for yourself pretty much everywhere if that's your plan and your goal.
Yes, we get into this like habit of the only thing that matters is what's around you, and it's just be careful with that. There's good people in all parts of the country and the world.
A Beaverton man doing donuts on a Lincoln City beach. I think we might know what was behind it. It might have been the vodka that fell out of his car once he opened it up. We'll get to that story coming up next in the news. Primetime, 1080 The Fan. Who doesn't love a little Hall & Oates on a Monday? Welcome back to Primetime. No Isaac. He's in Vegas, hopefully not getting COVID for the 16th time.
Fingers crossed.
He vows to be back on Thursday. We'll see about that. This is In the News for Monday, January 27th. A couple more stories before we get out of here. Let's see here. Let's talk about the beach driver. A Beaverton man, 30, Artem Savenko, was charged with drunk driving through crowds of beachgoers at Dee River Beach in Lincoln City on Saturday. Reports indicated that he was speeding through crowds of people over bonfires and doing donuts. Don't think that's allowed.
Running over bonfires?
It was already a beach that is not that is closed to vehicles, so there was that small problem. And when police finally caught up with him, the vodka bottle that fell out of the driver's side of the car indicated exactly why he was out there.
I am often blown away by these sorts of stories. Look, I like to have a good time. Sometimes I like to have too good of a time. As I stated, I just made 4 days of horrible decisions down in the desert. So I get going off the rails a little bit. I am shocked at the person. Like, just you get so drunk on vodka that your idea is, I'm just going to get in a car and do cookies and run over people's like bonfires. That blows my mind of the decision-making process that people make while in that state.
Yeah, it says the incident began when Lincoln City Police received calls about a car driving at high speeds through the beach area. The driver drove off before police arrived. Officers found the car parked near the Canyon Drive beach access point. When police approached, the driver began operating the car erratically, and a half-full bottle of vodka fell from the open trunk and into the sand. Savenko was arrested on charges of driving under the influence of intoxicants, reckless driving, and recklessly endangering other people. Multiple reports that he almost hit a number of people while he was doing cookies around the bonfires.
Again, just would have loved to see the interview with that. And how much vodka are we talking about here?
Yeah, when they say half a bottle was left, are we talking half a pint, half a fifth, half a half gallon?
That's what I'm saying. Like, half a bottle of vodka, if that is, and look, I get that's a decent amount, but if a half a bottle of vodka is what leads to you almost running people over on the beach,
drinking might not be your thing.
It might not be for you, man. Not it's not for everybody.
Oh, now my computer's over here playing ads at me. So that's
it happens.
We're gonna avoid that.
Maybe it was an ad for donuts and vodka.
Yeah, maybe it was. Let's see. Additionally, this is down in your neck. Well, not in your neck of the woods, in the neck of your jiu-jitsu woods down in Happy Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Portland police raided two stolen car chop shop operations today.
Oh.
So this was an effort from several different metro area law enforcement agencies and federal authorities. They say they believe it was part of a long and ongoing criminal operation to traffic hundreds of stolen cars every year. Found two locations down there in Happy Valley. When K2 crews arrived on the scene, one person was getting detained in handcuffs, and they're working to find out how many arrests were made. But apparently they're chopping cars down in Happy Valley.
Where are we going here? Just so I know to avoid or to go to look for a deal. Can I get a sweet deal?
It does not give an address, so I unfortunately can't give more detail than that. But it looks like we got a little bit of like Fast and Furious 11 going on down in the Clackamas County.
I'm convinced at our old building that there was a chop shop. But down when we lived on the south waterfront over
there.
It's
just fun to say chop shop.
Yeah, right? There's always like, it's because that John Wick, you know, like you always think that there's like some sort of shady thing going on.
It's usually dark. There's sparks flying in there.
Yeah, and like there was a place and it always had like really exotic cars, but it looked like an absolute dive.
Mm-hmm.
That was always,
like, huh?
And I never saw.
Who brought their car here for work?
And I never saw anyone go in ever. but it was just like a bunch of high-end cars. I was like, oh, yeah, something's going on there.
And then finally, primetime Colorado Springs. Did you hear about the unfortunate track and field incident over the weekend?
No, talk to me. Someone get hit with a javelin?
No, but close. An errant weight thrown by a competitor in the hammer throw struck and killed a spectator at a youth track and field meet in Colorado.
Oh, my gosh.
The weight cleared the certified barriers before striking the man on Sunday morning at the University of Colorado's Colorado Springs campus, according to a university statement. The individual, the man, was pronounced dead at the scene. He apparently had tried to shield his wife from the errant hammer throw. I have thought before that those, really most of the field events, or at least the shot put, the hammer, and the javelin, all seem pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
I'm not making light of this. That's terrifying.
That is, like, and you can't shield from the hammer. You got to tackle. You can't shield. Like, what are you going to do? You going to take that hammer?
You got to kind of, I guess, tackle and dive.
Yeah, you got to tackle and dive.
It's a 16-pound hammer or something like that.
I don't know. I've never thrown
one. No, I read in the article it is a 16-pound hammer.
Oh, my gosh. Coming God knows how fast and, like, what, 40, 50 feet at you. I don't know how long you throw those things. But that's the one on the end of the big, long chain, right?
Right. Yeah, you get a bunch of whip on that thing. And
oh,
then,
my goodness. I can't. My heart goes out. I can't do thoughts and prayers because I don't really pray, but my thoughts at least.
This article says it's the first time anyone's been killed in any track and field incident since 2017.
Well, yeah, don't they normally have like the big netting around it? So maybe someone was, were they walking? Were they
so they said it went over the restriction barrier. So I don't know if the throw just went too high.
God. Someone like threw, like someone chumped it and like threw it, like screwed up.
It sounds like it went over the boundary barrier and hit somebody essentially in the crowd.
In high school?
Yeah.
Ugh. I'm sorry. That's terrible.
Yeah, it's
another reason not to do track and field.
That's a good point.
Someone think of the spectators? I did track and field for a while, and God bless you, track and field bros out there. Didn't have it in me. Never been more bored in my entire life. You ever been to like a high school track meet?
Nothing going on.
There's not like you go. The only reason to go was like
I went to my brother's swim meets, and that was enough.
Yeah,
it's like it's an all day thing, and everyone sits around and waits for one person to do like 2 minutes, and then like
we take
it's
a
over.
Bus out to somewhere, and we drive out to God knows where. And I stood around for like an hour and a half, and then it took me like 5 minutes to throw the shot put, and I stood around for another 2 hours. And I had to take a bus ride home. And, like, the only way was, like, you were trying to, like, do something cool with all the track girls, and they didn't want anything to do with you because you threw the shot put. They were busy with the high jumpers. It's very depressing to just be a lonely, chubby high school shot putter. Just a bad existence. It's no good. No good, man.
And then this actually is in your neck of the woods, not your jiu-jitsu neck of the woods, but up in Vancouver, police arrest a suspect accused in 3 different bank robberies. So Vancouver police arrested this suspect with a Bank of America robbery from December and 2 other bank robberies. They report that a man displayed a note that implied he had a gun at the Fisher's Landing branch of the B of A on the Tuesday before Christmas.
That is literally like...
Is that like right by you?
It's like 3 blocks from where I live. I drive by that Bank of America. I don't go to Bank of America, but I drive by it every single day. I didn't know it was robbed.
Yeah, it says that they used surveillance to find their RV/motorhome. And the Vancouver Police Department patrol noticed that RV parked in a gas station in Vancouver, and it resembled the bolo for this vehicle. They found the person, and they found it was a match.
So someone was robbing a bank and then used...
And then went back to their RV, I guess.
They used an RV as the getaway vehicle?
That's what it sounds like.
Look, I'm not here to tell you how to go about robbing a bank, but I'm just going to take a guess here.
Tips from the public helped police identify the suspect as Ryan Frisbee.
Great name.
Probably a good
not.
Name.
Like, if you're looking for a getaway vehicle, I'm guessing you either want something that's very fast, very nimble, or maybe something that blends in, like a nice Honda Accord, like nondescript.
Okay, so hold on. I'm unpacking it now here. I don't believe that they used that vehicle for the robberies. They used surveillance photos to figure out who they thought it was. They realized then what his car was, and they were on the lookout for his car.
All right, because I was going to say, like, you don't want to be driving away
in
an RV. I feel like that's...
It's a slow getaway. Yeah. 2, it's hard to miss.
Unless you're driving, like, a cement truck, I really can't think of a worse vehicle to attempt a robbery than the RV. But, again, I'm new to the bank robbery game. Not my strong suit.
I did see an idea online. You know how we have like escape rooms and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah.
We should have heist rooms for dudes who want the thrill of what it would feel like to try to rob a bank, but with no actual consequences.
Well, that's that old, like, if like Groundhog's Day thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would 100%.
It'd be awesome. Yeah. Like, not to actually stick anybody up, not to actually hurt anybody, but like, could I get away with this hypothetically?
No, absolutely.
The answer is probably not, but I would love to try in a fake simulated environment.
100%. If you're giving me the chance and you say I consequence free, you know, I'm robbing that bank.
That's all the time we have for In the News. It's brought to you as always by The Advocates. You don't need a lawyer, you need an advocate. You can reach them at advocateslaw.com. Coming up, lots of news before we get back into our conference championship charcuterie. But before that, we have our Hot 5 at 5, and we'll do that coming up next. 1080 The Fan.